Ananian. Sometimes I'm not here to hand out silver bullets. I'm here to hand out diagnostic approach, trying to teach you and make you better diagnosticians. Because isn't that what it's all about?
The Car Doctor.
I had the pleasure of purchasing a 2012 Audi Q5. The only issue that I have with it is it's only got 14,000 miles on it.
Not bad. Okay. Well, that's not really an issue. That means it was waiting for you. So it just said, I'm not accumulating any mileage till Bob comes to get me.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, welcome aboard. I've got to start the lead story this hour with this, if you saw it this week, General Motors advised Chevy Bolt owners to park 50 feet away from other vehicles. And no, it's not personal hygiene issues. It's nothing other than, I read the article and all I could think about, I'm going to date myself here, was Artie Johnson from Laugh-In. Remember Artie Johnson from Laugh-In? He would always do that very interesting, right? This is very interesting. GM advises Chevy Bolt owners to park 50 feet away from other vehicles. GM owners that call into GM's hotline are being asked to park their cars 50 feet away. While it isn't the most realistic piece of advice, you think? It's a sign that the Chevy Bolt's battery issues are more dangerous than first expected. The first notable Chevy Bolt recall was last year following... This has been going on for a while. Following reports of sporadic battery fires, it was a limited recall. Turns out that every Chevy Bolt battery ever manufactured by LG Chem may contain small dangerous defects. Wow. GM finally issued a recall every Chevy Bolt ever sold in August and paused Chevy Bolt production 2 weeks ago. It's now working directly with LG Chem to bring some GM quality metrics. What were they doing the first time? To the battery manufacturing process. And unfortunately, Chevy Bolt owners are left waiting until their battery can be replaced. Wow. So here's the advice we want you Chevy Bolt owners to follow. Don't let your vehicle exceed a 90% charge. Use the target charge level mode. Instructions are on the Chevy Bolt recall page. Charge your vehicle more frequently, because that'll be easy to do, and avoid depleting the battery below the 70-mile mark. Park your vehicle outside when it isn't charging, and don't charge it overnight, and keep your car 50 feet away from other vehicles and buildings if possible. Well, what do you do if you live in New York City? What are you going to park it next to? What are you going to do? Park it out in New Jersey? You're near a building no matter where you go in an urban area. I can't
very
wait.
Interesting.
Right. I can't.
What do you mean very interesting? It was stupid.
Yes, it was stupid.
I can't wait for the all-electric car future. You people think I'm crazy. I'm telling you, I'm not. It just makes no sense. But if you're a Chevy Bolt owner on a serious note, be careful and park far away and maybe hope Santa Claus will bring you fireproof underwear for Christmas. Let's get over to Rich in New Jersey as a callback on a 90 Pontiac. Rich, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can we help you today?
Thank you, Ron. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I called last week and we spoke about this 90 Pontiac formula.
Right.
It's a Firebird formula, and it's a 305. It's a tune port car, and it's a 5-speed. And it's a very nice car. So I've had it for 20 years, and I've worked on it for that entire time. But now I'm having a problem with the engine bucking and missing between 1,700 and 2,000 RPM. And it only happens between that range. And like I say, it's a 5-speed, so if I get it up to 2,500 RPM, I let the clutch out like in second gear, it doesn't happen. It runs pretty good above that 2,000, and it runs pretty good below that 1,700.
Okay.
So you thought about it, and you told me four things to check. And I'll go over those four things, and then I'll give you the results, okay?
Go ahead.
So the first thing is the ignition timing bouncing. And so I checked for that, and then you asked for the pink wire that feeds the distributor. Does that have a consistent voltage, or
yes,
does that
right,
fall apart?
Right.
And let's see. Then you asked me to ohm out the coils of the fuel injectors.
Right.
So the injectors. You wanted to know what the ohms were. And let's see, the last thing was to disconnect the electronic spark timing and run the car on the street and see what happens. So let me go back to the first item. You said ignition timing, consistent or bouncing. It bounces all over the place with the electric spark timing connected. It bounces, it's set at about 28 degrees before top dead center at 800 RPM. That's an idle. And then it goes down to 24 degrees and it goes to 750 RPM. So it's going up and down all the time. If you hold it off idle, like 1,000 RPM, it gets steady, and it stays steady at 34 degrees before top dead center.
And at the point where the problem happens, Rich, is the timing steady at the point where the problem happens between 1,700 and 2,000?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Okay.
Yes. So, yes.
So, there's no timing issue. Go ahead, next.
Okay, so the voltage at the pink wire that feeds the distributor, and that stays steady at 13.6 volts.
Okay.
And it stays steady when the car is bucking at 17 to 2,000, and the battery in the voltage is 13.4.
Good.
13.7.
Right.
So it sees battery voltage.
Okay.
Okay. The next thing was to ohm out the coils in the fuel injectors. So from the cold was 16.2 and to 16.4 on. So they all were somewhere between that when it was cold. When they were hot, meaning 220 degrees, and I let them soak for a while. That's the 220 was the coolant temperature. I let them soak for a while.
Right.
16.9. 17.6.
Okay, so the injectors are good.
Okay, and then the last item, which is what solved the problem, disconnect the electronic spark timing, test drive the car on the street. So I did that, and I don't have any bucking or misses between 1,700 and 2,000. And I took it home, I reconnected the ETS, and the problem comes back, and then I disconnected it, and the problem goes away. So by plugging in that tan wire with the black trace, when you take it apart, there's no bucking. When you put it together, there's bucking.
So we've got to talk then about, you know, what triggers the electronic spark timing circuit. And there should be a knock sensor in this vehicle, if I remember right, from 90. There's a way that they would listen for knock. So, you know, I bet the same thing would occur if you were to disconnect the knock sensor with the EST connected, and I bet the problem goes away also, because now it has no way to listen. It's going to set a fault code. And what we're proving is that it's an EST circuit performance fault. Now, is the stock distributor back in it, Rich, or do you still have the performance distributor that you had purchased in?
I still have a performance distributor, but the performance distributor was like a street distributor from MSD.
Okay.
So it was called MSD Street Fire, so it's not a real performance distributor, but it's a little bit.
So does that distributor give you the ability to bypass the EST circuit and just run the MSD performance distributor as they designed it?
I'm not with you. Say that again.
Well, in other words, is that distributor designed to work with EST?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's a stock distributor, and the two previous distributors that I had in there were designed to work with EST.
All right. So then what we want to know is, now we've got to start to focus on the knock sensor and the knock sensor circuit itself. Do we have... You have a scan tool, Rich?
No, I don't.
Okay. The knock sensor on that car is located where? I'm trying to remember. Down in the...
Okay.
Go ahead.
It's down on the side of the block where you would drain the water out of the block if you wanted to remove all
right,
the coolant.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a pipe plug there, and they stuck a knock sensor in there.
Okay. So I'm wondering, I would disconnect the knock sensor, plug the EST back in, and take it for a ride. And you know, you're going to set a fault code for knock. It's going to test knock. It's going to advance timing. I think 10 degrees was the number. It's going to advance timing 10 degrees. Can it hear it? And then it's going to retard it. Does it see it? Does it see a change? And I think your problem is going to be somewhere in that area of the knock sensor. I'm curious to see with the EST plugged in. With the EST plugged in and the knock sensor unplugged, does the problem go away? Or does it stay the same? That's the next question.
All right. I don't know that.
Right.
So I'll do
that and call me back.
You don't mind if I keep calling you back?
No, not at all. That's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here for, kiddo.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Yes. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Rich. Okay. You have a good rest of the day. So, of course, listen, that's what the car doctor's here for. I want to hear the answers. You know, I don't care how old it is or how new it is. That's what we're here for. We're here for you. Call us. That's what this is all about. 855-560-9900 in case you're interested. And we'll be back right after this.
She's real fine, my 409. She's real fine, my 409, my 409.
Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. God, I love that song. You know, gee, I love that kind of talk. Let's get over to Jeremy in D.C., see what's going on here. Jeremy wants to buy a new truck. Jeremy, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I've been looking maybe to order a 2022 Colorado. They got really good trailer towing numbers.
Okay.
And the diesel has great ones, and I've read a lot of good stuff about that Colorado diesel, but I got two little questions. One, is it a finicky motor? Like, am I going to have issues with check engine lights perpetually? And two, you know, I'm worried about getting parts 10 years from now. If I got one with the 3.6 liter V6, that engine is, I mean, in everything, you know, but that diesel's kind of a one-off,
right?
Made by, I think, Fiat, if you could believe it. And
yeah,
like,
I think
do
you're
you
right.
See
yep.
part, do you see parts availability in the future as being a problem for that more so than the V6?
I think, I'll answer that part first. I think going forward, I think some of these, is, I'll use your term, one-off vehicles, that unless they grow in popularity, I think once we get past that 6-7 year mark of comfort, that, yeah, I think we're going to see parts issues. I mean, listen, we're seeing parts availability issues now. I don't have to tell you that. Everybody knows it. The parts chain is broken. You know, it's really crazy. I was just saying this to somebody the other day that, you know, I was explaining where the automotive aftermarket came from and how, you know, how come they're so affected by the parts chain. You know, the automotive aftermarket, and I've read the story a couple of different ways, but the automotive aftermarket, for example, came about as a result of World War II. The car companies weren't making cars anymore. They were making, you know, planes and tanks and everything else. And it was the aftermarket that sort of stepped in to fill the missing gap. And, you know, we still see it today now, right? You know, but, you know, to what limit can the aftermarket fill the gap? Certain companies can, certain companies can't. You know, depending upon who Fiat's got programmed out to make the parts for that diesel, you know, once they reach the mark of whatever their contract time period ends, they may not be obligated to make whatever widget you're looking for it. So in 10 years, you're sort of limited to what's available in the marketplace.
It might not be financially, there might not be enough financial incentive to continue doing
Correct.
Yeah.
Now some companies, Motorrad, right? You hear me talking about Motorrad all the time. They make thermostats, radiator caps, but they also make sensors. They make a lot of OE manufacturer parts. All right. It's amazing what they make. You can read about it on their website, motorrad.com. They make a lot of things. They supply directly right to manufacturers, Chevrolet, Ford, you know, Chrysler, the whole nine yards. It's all there. You know, because the aftermarket, and this ties back to what I was saying previous, that the aftermarket is now starting to step in and fill the gap, and they've been doing it for a while, where they're making a lot of the parts supplying directly to the OEs. Motorrad is one of them. And, you know, but will they make the parts for that Chevy Colorado in 2 years? Depends who's got the contract. And that's the problem. That's how it kind of works. I think the car of the future, we're going to be, I think the car business is going to change, Jeremy. I really do. I think we're going to see, you know, when the electric vehicle boom gets sorted out and we get into whatever percentage of the fleet will be electric. And as they sort of calm things down in the next 15 years and figure out what the direction is, I think you're going to see less diversification. You know, Every you know, not I don't think every car is going to be white and every car is going to have one mirror, but I think we're going to be seeing, you know, there's too many choices, there's too many options.
Right.
It's crazy.
Like a lot of same sourced parts,
right.
Potentially.
Right.
Yeah.
I was at a, you know, and then again, maybe they won't. Maybe they haven't learned that lesson. I was at a car show 2 weeks ago, and it was a, gosh, what was it? It was a late 50s Chrysler, I forget, Chrysler New Yorker, and it had the little phonograph on the, they actually made, it was a Chrysler, I think it was a New Yorker, like a 57, 58, and it had, from the factory, it had a little record player mounted under the dashboard to play these little tiny record albums so you could take the music of your choice along with you. And that was the 50s. Right,
yeah.
You know, it's, and I bet you can't get parts for that anymore. You know, will they continue to do it? Look at the diversification in every car you sit in. Right, go sit in a couple of different cars and look at the different options. And you know who's really kind of surprised me, and I don't know if this applies. I think it does. Hyundai. Hyundai has really gotten crazy in the last couple of years. We service more than a few of them, and we've noticed their electronics for what I consider to be a fairly inexpensive vehicle have really grown. You know, side view mirror cameras and, you know, different angle cameras and cornering and blind spot camera angles, and they're really starting to put a lot of camera and technology into their cars. You know, will you be able to get parts for it in 10 years? You wonder,
right.
Because, you know, they're the only ones doing it. Listen,
so
if the car companies had their way, I'll say this to you. If the car companies had their way, of course, you'd buy a new vehicle every 5 years. They'd be thrilled.
Right. So do you think, honestly, in this circumstance, the way to go would be the V6 over the diesel? Just as, I mean, if I was thinking about that only, I mean, would that be the safer bet?
I think so.
I was thinking that, and I just wanted some confirmation that I wasn't crazy.
Yeah. No, I think so, because I think the, and this is just total perspective on my part and just thinking down the road, I think as the electric car boom continues, I think you'll see the hybrid thing disappear more and more. I think you'll see the diesel concept disappear more and more, and they'll stay with, you know, internal combustion engines and electric, because obviously there's more internal combustion engines than anything, and there's going to be more electric than anything. And the other two fads, as I'll call them, I don't think they're necessarily fads, but I just think those are the ones that are going to die off. We'll see. It's going to be an interesting couple of decades. So that's all I can say.
Well, man, thanks a lot for the time.
You're welcome. Anytime, Jeremy. You be well.
All right.
Yeah, always. He's always got some great questions, Jeremy from D.C. He's got a lot of insight into what's going on, I think. But I, you know, it's really anybody's guess as to where or what the car of the future will look like or what to buy. Like I said, I think they would be content with, you know, replace that car every couple of years. I think that's really what they're after, because, you know, and then again, you know, can you replace a car? You know, right now it's such a tough thing to do. We're talking to somebody this week, and she wants to buy a new car, but she doesn't know what to buy, and she doesn't even know what to go look at, and the dealer doesn't even have any cars she can go sit in to look at anything, to drive anything. You know, not a great time to be buying a car. If you can find one, buy it, and don't hesitate. It's a crazy market. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's back right after this. Don't go away. Ron Ainey, the Car Doctor. Good programming today, Mr. Ray. You have the music bumps just right.
Yes, and all I can imagine whenever I hear that one is you dressing up like Al Bundy.
Well, that could be me. I could. I used to do that. It was my No Ma'am T-shirt and everything. Can I tell the new story now? Can I?
Sure.
Well, so if you've been following along with us today in the previous hour and this hour, you should know that, you know, we're sort of here. Well, I don't know if it's by the grace of God, but, you know, it's a new story. Every couple of years, we will replace power supplies in the studio computers and, you know, the main computers that run the show. We've got an automation computer and an editor that are basically the heart and soul of the studio. And every couple of years, we'll see a glitch. We'll put a and we don't hesitate. We have spare power supplies and CPU fans and a couple other things in stock, so we can change things during commercial break. God forbid something happens, or prior to the show, and we're good to go. Tuesday this week, it was Tuesday, right, Tom? Because the automation machine's been rock solid for a while.
Yeah. Well, we should tell people that I can look in and I can
right.
See
well, that's right, and that's how we knew it. Yeah,
and we make changes, and I couldn't get to the machines. Like I said, Ron. It's offline.
Reboot it,
please.
So I rebooted it, and it came up, and I you know, left it alone. And you know, about 2 hours later, Tom sends me another text. He says, "Hey, take a look at the studio. You know, the automation machine's offline again." So I got back to the studio and I looked again, and it was off. Huh. So we tried a couple other things, booted it up, and it worked for I don't know till the next day, and then it was off again. Gee, I don't understand. I just put a new power supply in, and Tom said to me, "What does new stand for?" And I went, "Aha!" And I said, "You know, Tom, it's working like a power supply issue. It just seems to react that way."
Well, for the computer geeks out there, it started looking like a bad hard drive, but it just didn't make sense after a while.
Right.
So,
what got us was we put a power supply in it, put another power supply, another new power supply in it. And we finished this last night, as a matter of fact, less than 24 hours before showtime. And we have a backup computer we could have run automation on, but we put a, you know, another CPU, another cooling fan, I'm sorry, another power supply in it, and it's working. And I looked at Tom and I said, "No, never ever worked. I'd take used parts any day. Field tested always seemed to work, you know, that much better." And the moral to the story is you just can't trust anything. You've got to have a backup to everything. And, of course, I had to get my comment about electric vehicles that will be so computer-driven and chip-driven in there, because it just makes me wonder what's going to be the failure rate of those. But
they'll never fail. If they do, we just get out, close the windows, open the windows back up, and get back in.
Well, you know, Tom, I really, and we're off subject here, and we'll get back to Brian and Philly in a minute, Brian, I promise. We'll get to you. You know, I really envision the day, and I don't know where it is. Is it 10 years in the future, 15 years in the future, 20 years in the future? I've read the stories where, you know, you'll buy an electric vehicle or a car, whatever it is. An electric vehicle, I think, is where I heard the story. And after so many years, if it dies on the road, you will take your tags off. That's why Velcro was invented. And the car will be left there to be picked up by a recycling machine, just like a street sweeper. They'll come along. They'll identify it as belonging to Tom. Tom will get credit back for environmentally safely disposing of his vehicle. It'll get chewed up into recyclable parts, and he'll just go buy another vehicle. You know, what does the future look like? You know, 200 years from now, they may be aghast that, oh my God, those people drove cars and cast iron blocks and junkyards and oil oozing into the ground, and no wonder the world's in the shape it's in. That's not really the reason, but anyway, so that's new. Never, ever worked. Thank God we're here. Let's go over to Brian in Philly. Brian, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. Thanks for waiting. How can I help?
Ron, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Oh, nothing. This is not theoretically a problem. It's more like an inquiry. I have a 2017 Ford Fusion. I'm coming up on 3 months since I bought it. Bought it in December of 16. Still in the original battery, which seems to be better. It's better than I've done the last couple of years.
Right.
The battery seems fine, but, you know, like I said, since I'm coming up on 5 years, it seems like a while. Is there any indication or any way to tell when the battery needs to be replaced?
You can perform a load test. A competent shop equipped with an accurate battery load test charging system tester could do that. There are companies out there, if you want to go read about the procedure, what sort of equipment they use, there's a company out there by the name of Associated Test Equipment. If you Google it, I believe their website is associatedtest.com. I'm not 100% sure of that, but if you Google Associated Test Equipment, it'll come up. And it's fascinating. They talk about how the machines get made and what they do and what they'll test. That'll kind of boggle your mind. They make some of the best stuff on the planet. You can also go out to autobatteries.com. Great website, good source, good resource. And they will explain to you how batteries are constructed and purposeful testing and, you know, where to source them from and what to purchase. You know, my concern would be that, yes, it's 5 years old. And my rule of thumb has always been 5 years old, I'm going to change it just because I want to change it on my terms. I want to change it on my timeline. You know, I want to change it. We're going into winter here in the Northeast in the next couple of months, and I don't want to find out January 3rd, 4 feet of snow on the ground, and it's coming down freezing rain, that I can't auto start the car because the battery's dead, and I've got to go out there and dig it out of the snow pile and chip away at it. You know what I'm saying?
I did that on my my 2005 Taurus. When I hit 5 years in that car, changed automatically. My last car was a Nissan Altima, and that one just died.
Right.
It went, maybe, I don't even know if it went 4 years. It just flat out died.
And some batteries won't go 5 years. You know, it seems like, and I don't know if it's by model year, but I will say this: most Ford vehicles, 5 to 6 years on a battery. GMs, 4, maybe 5. You know, and somebody out there is going to write me an email. Ryan, I've got a GM with 10 years on it. Good, you're the one. Send it to the Smithsonian. All right. Honda group size 51 batteries. I don't think the Honda group size 51s go more than three and a half years, and we're constantly putting batteries in the vehicles. And you can play with brand, you can play with, you know, all sorts of different, whatever you can change, and it doesn't matter. It's the 51 group size is a tough battery to keep longevity out of. So I would, you know, to answer your question directly, yeah, I would change it. You know, I would replace the battery. It's you're going into your fifth winter now. You know, it just makes sense to change it now before you have the problem.
Yeah, because this is, like I said, my Nissan Altima, I got less than 4.
Right.
And you know, I don't want to get into that position.
Right.
I'm taking a road trip within 2 weeks, so I'm kind of, I'm going out of state in a few weeks, but my inspection time is coming up in the next month or two, so I think that'll be a good opportunity.
Right.
You know, taking your advice.
Yeah, let them, you know what, take it into the shop, let them load test the battery just so you have a reference point, but tell them. And ask them also, and you'll read about this at autobatteries.com, they'll talk about cold cranking amps and battery size, the electrical capacity of the battery, not the physical case size. Ask them, you know, if the regular battery for the vehicle is $100, how much is the next larger electrical rated battery that'll still physically fit the car? You know, they always make a gold version, a silver version, a good, better, best scenario. And sometimes you'll find for what might be another $20, you'll get a battery that's got 15 or 20% more electrical power. And I tend to do that simply because of all the electronics on vehicles today. I want something that gives me the most electrical capability that I can get to allow me to, do what I have to do. There's no such thing as a too big of a battery as far as electrical capacity. So
I had a 75.
So, but anyway, I'm sorry, Brian. We seem to have dropped you. I apologize. The phone system went goofy. But you got my point. I got your point. Do that. Be safe. And I hope you enjoy your road trip out of state. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Let's get over and talk to Ann in Arizona, 06 Toyota Tacoma. Ann, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
You know what? I'm just trying to educate myself and help my mechanic. So
sure.
What's going on? It's been about a month and a half now. My engine light came on.
Okay.
And so my ABS light is not on. Nothing else is happening. But what started 2 weeks ago is that my speedometer now is going from 40, boom, it drops down to zero, and it stays at zero sometimes through the duration of my trip. My mechanic did do a transmission speed sensor change about 2 weeks ago. It didn't change anything at all.
Okay.
So I'm just trying to see, because now my speedometer is being affected. I don't know whether or not you got to really dumb this answer down for me.
No, listen,
because
this is easy. Okay.
Because I don't know anything about cars, but I do want to educate. I just do little baby maintenance on my truck that I tried to do myself.
Sure.
But I just don't know if I have a cable odometer problem or a speed sensor odometer problem, or maybe it's the same thing.
Well, first of all, there's no cable here. This is all electronic. All right, everything here is electric and wire, so we haven't had cables in a while. So that being said, P0500 is just, that's the fault code that's saying it's seeing a loss of signal somewhere along the way between the speedometer and the engine control module and or the transmission. Something's not sending out a correct signal. What happens is, and it'll happen one of two ways depending upon which engine this is, they'll use a combination of wheel speed sensors. Do you know what I mean when I say wheel speed sensors,
yeah.
Anne?
Uh-huh.
You know, for the ABS, they'll use a combination of wheel speed sensors and or transmission speed sensors to help determine and calculate vehicle speed to display on the speedometer, what you see it, you know, in behind the steering wheel. So that being said, you know, a P0500 can be a fault with one of those sensors. It can be a fault with the engine computer. It can be a fault with the speedometer cluster itself. It can be a fault with wiring. It can be a fault with ground. The fact that you're starting to see the speedometer drop out now, what I'd like to do is I would like to hook up a scan tool and look at vehicle speed, all right, and drive it. And, you know, turn the cruise on, set the cruise, or just to make it easy because he doesn't want to be distracted. And if he's driving along at 35, 40 miles an hour and he's reading 35, 40 miles an hour as a steady rate of speed, at and he's going to be reading what the computer sees with the scan tool, but the speedometer starts to drop out. From my seat here, it sounds like we've either got a problem with the ground for what they call the combination meter, which is what the cluster is, or the cluster itself. If you're seeing erratic speed that matches, if the scan tool shows you an erratic signal that matches what the speedometer is doing, then it's what's driving it, and we've got to think more about there are other sensors involved in this circuit or the related wiring. Does that make sense? Not
a whole lot, but it just I'm taking notes that maybe and maybe my mechanic hopefully does already know this, but you know it comes down to it. I just don't trust anybody, so that's why I'm trying to educate myself.
Okay.
So when he's talking to me, I can understand.
All right. Think of it. Let me see if I can. Do you jog? Do you run? Do you walk?
Yes.
So you jog, right? You ever put one of those things on your ankle, the distance meters that tell you how far you ran?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, you ran and it said you were going to run 2 miles and you ran 2 miles. If that meter was off and you ran 2 miles, but it only says a mile and a half, the sensor's bad, right?
Right.
Okay. If you ran 2 miles and it says 2 miles, but it feel like you ran 3 miles, your brain interpreted it wrong. Something's wrong between your foot and your brain, right? Wiring. Yeah. Okay, so it's a matter of just what we're trying to do is just track down the possible source of where the failure is occurring and then working our way out from there. There is a way to diagnose this, and he needs to do that, not just continue to swap parts. That would be my only concern. Ask him to diagnose it, maybe use a lab scope, go that route, and see what that does for him. If you have any questions, you call me back. Be well. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We'll return right after this. Welcome back, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Boy, where'd the 2 hours go, Tom? It just kind of flew by. You know, I keep...
Holy cow.
Yeah, here we are, right, the last couple of minutes. I got to read this letter or paraphrase this letter. David Gotti, he's an account exec for NRG Media. He's out there in Iowa, and he's part of a bunch of different radio stations, one of which is News Talk 1540 KXEL, who carries us out there Iowa way. And I've got to tell you, I love reading David's letters. Ron, hopes all well. The Audi 2000 has thrown a cat code. I'm paraphrasing here. I talked to my mechanic about what it could be, O2 sensor, yada, yada, yada. How good is Seinfeld? He installed a word into the English language, yada, yada, yada. I called Berryman yesterday to see whether and which one of their products might clean things up. David goes on to talk about the positive experience he had with their customer service and their phone system, and how he got to talk to the chemist, the guy that actually makes the product, to help him decide which part or which chemical product Berryman makes would, you know, be the right one for his vehicle to help clean up the catalytic converter fault. He then goes on to talk about a couple of other things, one of which is me, and he wants to come out and see us, which would be a great time. I can tell that would. I love his line about tell Tom hi. Tom, hi, by the way. Keep up the good work. I want to get out there before one of us retires. Wait, that'll never happen. Okay, before one of us dies. That might happen eventually because we're all just visitors here. Take care, and thanks for having such a great show and a station for us to carry and for endorsing a product such as Berryman. They really do a great job. David, always a pleasure. I always love getting these letters, and for you, sir, you have a creative art of licensing ability to write that just makes me stand there in awe. A great guy. I appreciate everything you do for us and for radio. Till the next time, I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. The mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.